afternoon. The wind waves will be less than 2 feet, becoming 3 to 4 in the afternoon. West swell 2 to 4 feet at 8 seconds. Tonight, west winds 5 to 15 knots. The wind waves 1 to 3 feet. A west swell of 3 to 4 feet at 8 seconds and patchy fog. Tomorrow, west winds 5 to 15 knots. Wind waves 1 to 3 feet. West swell 2 to 3 feet at 10 seconds. And I also have current temperatures for you here. Salinas is at 56 degrees. It's 55 in Watsonville. Monterey's at 55. We're at 57 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSCO Studios. For your King Hill traffic update, looks like we've got a traffic hazard on southbound 1, just north of Soquel Drive, and that's some wood pallets and drywall in lanes number 2 and 3. Right where they merge. So watch out for that, and CHP is on the way to grab that. And that's what I got for you. 475-1080 if you see something out there that I need to report and warn everybody about. So up next, let's see, we've got the Saturday special, and Kay Zwerling's going to be here too. 2300 Portola, come down to the station and buy a book and get it signed. Kay Zwerling is here. The official time, 10:07 and 20 seconds on this Saturday, August 27th. And here is Michael Zwerling, MZ.
I've been called worse
I'm
things.
Sorry. Have
That's
you?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right.
Yep.
So, it's another K day, as you said.
It is a K day. Mm-hmm. K day. I like that.
When K comes and people come and visit with her, it's great because, you know, they get to know each other and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So it's really cool. Yeah, so come on down.
Have a nice visit. It's a nice visit.
2300 Portola Drive. Pick up a bumper sticker, too.
Yeah.
Won't that be fun?
Wee.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm jealous of Olson because he gets to go to the farmer's market at Cabrillo and originate his show while I have to rot here in the studio or get ready. You know.
Rot?
Yeah.
So. You could go. Why don't you just pop on down somewhere?
I always plan to do that.
To the boardwalk.
Then the time gets away from the boardwalk.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
What about the boardwalk?
I don't know. Just go down there and broadcast. It's fun. Lots of people.
That's an idea, huh?
I just threw it out there. Ideas come to me real quick.
Idea.
You never know.
Do you have any other great ideas of great places from which to broadcast?
I will write them down when they come to me. I'll think about it.
Bless you. Bless you. Okay, well, I think it's time for us to start the show.
Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Hey, KSCO Land, KSCO.com. MZ here welcoming you to hour number one of the Saturday special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. On the air right up until noontime with an audience participation interview program that you are invited to become part of. All you got to do is have a telephone or a computer. Phone number is 713-4277. Computer address is...
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
My email address, mz@ksco.com. Okay, I want to welcome Don Weber. Don Weber, now that's a name from the past, from me. Don and I knew each other, golly, in the late 80s when we were active in a, this is my recollection, and maybe there's a little haziness here. I know that you ran for city council in Santa Cruz.
Long ago.
Yeah, that was in the 80s for sure.
Far away.
And as part of that, I mean, weren't you, like most people, pretty irritated with the planning department and all the stuff you had to go through?
It's hard for me to recall now exactly why I ran, and I barely surfaced in the election, as it turns out. I think I came in 10th out of a field of 17. You know, it was a chaotic year, and there were 17 people running for 3 seats.
88, does that sound right, or 87?
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
It was the year when George Bush Sr. got in against Michael Dukakis. I remember that much.
Oh,
that
okay.
Was the year.
Yeah, and he had just taken office in 89 when we had the 89 earthquake, and he and visited Santa Cruz, and there's a famous picture of him marching up and down with Marty up and down the Pacific Garden Mall with Marty Wormhout and Gary Patton. And
that's it. That was that was the year before that. It was just before the earthquake, about a year before the earthquake.
Right.
It was a kind of raucous election, as I recall.
Well, I've told this story, you know, probably ad nauseum. I'll say it one more time just for your benefit. The reason I have KSCO is back in the 80s, a broadcast group called Fuller Jeffrey Corporation had purchased the radio station from the corporation called Radio Santa Cruz, which was two-thirds owned by the people who owned the Santa Cruz Sentinel daily newspaper, the McPherson family, Fred and Malin McPherson brothers, and Vernon Berlin, who had the idea that Santa Cruz should have its own radio station. That's where the call letters come from, KSCO, Santa Cruz's own. It's not keeping senior citizens occupied, as some people think or have said, but Santa Cruz's own radio station. And he had planned to put this station on the air much sooner than it got on the air, because he had planned to put it on the air, but then this thing called World War II happened. So KSCO didn't get to come on the air until 1947. September, the McPherson family and Radio Santa Cruz, in conjunction with Mr. Berlin, ran the station for 39 years before it was sold to Fuller Jeffrey Broadcasting Company. And the Jeffrey, who of Fuller Jeffrey, became a friend of mine. And I said to him, J.J. Jeffrey, I said, you know, you really need to have a talk show on that station. It wasn't a talk radio station at the time. It was they had experimented with quite a number of music formats, and none of them quite hit right. There was, you know, they tried a whole bunch of them.
You had news coverage, though.
Yeah, always had local news. Yeah. Always had local news with.
I remember Dick Little.
Yeah, Dick was the newsman extraordinaire. Couldn't have a better newsman, which, you know. So
when
for many years.
When did you buy it?
1991. So Fuller Jeffrey had the KSCO AM and FM for 5 years. From 86 through 91. And it just didn't work out. They were very, very successful broadcasters. They were very great at taking underperforming stations and turning them around into very successful stations, and either keeping them and operating them at a cash flow or selling them and making a profit. Well, with KSCO AM and FM, it was sort of a disaster for them, because the first thing they did was get rid of Morning Chimes, which was a Twin Lakes Baptist Church program. And everybody who was anybody was a member of the Twin Lakes Baptist Church.
A big church.
Yeah. And so that was the first big mistake. They got off to a bad start, and that was the end of that. Yeah. But in any case,
you saw your offering price going down and down and down.
Well, actually, at that point, I'd pretty much given up ever being able to own the place. When these people bought it for several million dollars in 1986, it was way out of my league, you know. And so, but I got to be friends with one of the partners who really considered Santa Cruz a real neat place and liked to hang his hat here, J.J. Jeffrey. And I told him one day, I said, you need to have a talk show on that KSCO station.
No kidding.
And he said, well, what would the talk show be about? And I said, the planning department? I had become involved in a group called Citizens for Planning Reform.
Uh-huh.
People who were upset with the cartwheels they had to turn, you know, and the somersaults and everything to get a permit to do anything, whether it was to hang a towel rack or to do a subdivision. You know, you just had
to. The city or the county?
Both.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, both Santa Cruz City and Santa Cruz County. So my father actually came up with the name. We weren't developers or anything like that. We were just people who wanted to, you know, pardon me, add on a room, and didn't feel like having to spend $40,000 and still not have a permit, you know.
Yeah. Hire a land use consultant.
Oh, my God, it was awful.
Yeah.
So we got involved, and that's where I swear that you and I first met, you know. Maybe when you were running for...
Who knows? I don't recall. Recall you up on Escalona.
Uh-huh.
Remember that house?
Yeah. I built a house at the head of Laurel Street.
Yeah, right.
And
that place.
Yeah, and got a million-dollar education, learning, acting as my own contractor. And so I learned a lot doing that. But that was a house to live in. It wasn't a house to flip or sell or make a profit or anything like that. So anyhow.
That's how I recall our connection. I remember looking at that place and going through it with you.
Well, many years later, you know, after we did this Citizens for Planning Reform talk show on KSCO that evolved into my learning that the radio station was for sale and that the FM had been sold, so the AM was a lot more affordable. And here we are 20 and a half years later, with me and my family being the owner of the radio station.
Did you have a background in radio before that?
Yeah. Yeah, always wanted to be. I did the high school radio show here.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's what I thought.
And got kicked out of here no fewer than four times.
You got to watch yourself, man.
Before I figured out that, you know, I absolutely had to own the place so that no one could kick me out. Anyhow, so fast forward 20 and a half years from then, which is probably 22 and a half years or 23 and a half years, and you have made a name for yourself recently as the person who is probably most responsible for the demise of the La Bahia Hotel project on Beach Street in Santa Cruz. And we're gonna you know, use this program to discuss that project and then get into the whole notion of the D word, like the F word or the you know, bad, dirty words. The D word has become, you know, a really nasty word and has been for many, many years in Santa Cruz County. And people get hysterical at the thought of new things being proposed and developed. You talk, so while I clear my throat.
Well, sure, I'll get you some water for sure. The latest development, I think we ought to call it on the La Bahia parcel. La Bahia is a little smaller than an acre and a half, right on the waterfront. It's a prime piece of real estate. It's between the Coconut Grove and the wharf in the prime tourist area of Santa Cruz. And it was improved 85 years ago with a wonderfully beautiful structure and that over the ensuing decades has deteriorated markedly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for as long as I've been there for about 30 years. And there have been numerous attempts to redevelop the property. It's been zoned for hotel use all that time, or at the very least since the beach area plan was adopted back in 99. And although it's true that I have been instrumental in arguing that the Coastal Commission should not allow the new zoning to take effect, it's not true that I'm anti-development, either generally or on that particular parcel.
I didn't think so.
I like the idea of developing that parcel as a hotel, and it's rare for neighbors to take that position. You know, normally neighbors are accused of not wanting any development, and I know I've been called a NIMBY on numerous occasions.
Yeah, not in my backyard. Yeah.
But the neighbors are pretty much not only resigned, but actually pretty sanguine about the idea of redeveloping the property as a hotel. And again, that's a rarity, but I think it's pretty much across the board on Beach Hill that it would be a boon to the city government, to the tourist businesses, to the downtown, to extend seasons, the tourist season into its shoulder area, have another hotel down there. Makes a lot of sense. And I know Dick Wilson has been trying for three decades when he was city manager to get it done. And I've often said it shouldn't be that hard to develop a hotel on the beach in Santa Cruz, but it has proved to be. And this latest iteration, which is 5 years in the planning or 6 years, and millions of dollars have been invested and countless hours of city time to try and make it happen, was, in my view and in the view of quite a few people that I represent, a flawed project, not because it developed the La Bahia parcel as a hotel, which is actually a good idea, but because it was destructive of almost every aspect of the existing historic property. Instead of trying to incorporate major parts of it or even significant parts of it, it just decided that, well, we're better off destroying it and starting over. And it required its own zone. It required a substantial increase in the building envelope. And
I thought the building envelope was the entire parcel because it's so small.
Well, when I say the envelope, I don't mean the footprint. I mean the height and width and bulk, what they sometimes refer to as the bulk and scale.
Right. Okay, so let's see. The parcel is bordered by Beach Street on the water side.
That's correct.
And by Main Street, looking from the water on the right. No, on the left. Mm-hmm. On the left. Mm-hmm. And then
a little connector street called Westbrook.
Uh huh.
On the east side. And on the north side, it's First Street, which is one of the three streets of Beach Hill.
That's where you live, right? You live on First Street.
I have lived there for about 30 years.
Okay. So I would think that the people who live on First Street would be most impacted in terms of their ocean view being interrupted to some degree. Is that right?
Well, it's ocean view is only a part of it, and no matter how the property is developed, the ocean views that the private ocean views that homeowners enjoy is a thing of the past. But that's again part of everybody on First Street understands that is going to disappear. That there's no question.
Disappear? Because I mean, if the hotel is there now, and the hotel has some height and mass, and so
the hotel isn't there now. What's there now is on the front portion of the property, a 1 and 2 story set of structures.
It's used as apartments.
That's not really a hotel, and it really doesn't block hardly any of the public or private views from behind it.
But the
realistically, topography is such that no matter how you build, even if you built a 1-story building on First Street, it would interfere significantly with private views. Mm-hmm. But I know that it's popular to say that we're people who are just trying to save our ocean views. I've heard it from top to bottom, and it's simply not true. Our ocean views as private homeowners will almost certainly disappear with any development of the La Bahia parcel, reasonable or unreasonable. So we're only asking that it be reasonably scaled, not so that we can save ocean views, which, as I say, everybody understands are not savable.
Uh-huh.
But the bulk and scale go well beyond the extent to which they impede people's ocean views. The bulk and scale of a hotel that has essentially no setbacks and is 4-5 stories tall in a neighborhood of 3-story homes, all of which have setbacks and, you know, it's primarily residential, is, you know, that's what I mean by expanded building envelope. The idea is we can't build within the current zoning. We need our own zoning. It has to be bigger, and we need all those extra ocean rooms in order to make it pencil out. And the city government bought into that notion as the highest and best use for the property, and proceeded to run with that concept right until they ran into the Coastal Commission, which decided several weeks ago that reasonable alternatives to achieve your objectives by not changing the zoning law, but simply
what did they want to change it from to?
It's complicated. They didn't want to change the use, right? And some of the things they wanted to clean up were leftovers from when they intended a 275-room conference center on an aggregated parcel in the area. That language was still in the law. They wanted to clean that up. And they wanted to allow themselves to the ability to demolish the landmark, which was protected by a whole series of laws. But they, with respect to just the zoning, they wanted to raise the height limit from 43 feet to 61 feet, and then an additional 10 feet on top of that. So it amounts to four and a half to five stories, as opposed to one, two, and three stories. So I can't say it would have doubled it, but a convenient way of looking at it is to see it as currently a 30,000 square foot structure to be replaced by a structure roughly six times that size. So again, it's when you talk about changes in zoning, you tend to concentrate on height, and I know there's this tendency to say, oh, it's too high, and as if we could just knock a story off, it would be fine. But it's not only the height, it really is the bulk and scale.
We're talking to Don Weber about the La Bahia project, which has been killed, effectively. I mean, it's dead.
There really is no appeal from the Coastal Commission decision unless they could figure out a way to sue them for your breach of one duty or another, but I think that's ridiculous. The Coastal Commission has the final say on amendments to
so
the
things
local
have to
coastal
start
plan.
Either the La Bahia will continue to be what it is now, a decrepit, you know, historical structure, or they have to start all over again for another 5 to 10 years for to go to another coastal commission.
I've heard 5 or 10 years, and I think that's unfortunate. I don't think it takes that long. I think there's four ways that the city can approach the future. One is to try and salvage what they can from the investment they just made in Swenson's plan and see if that can be tweaked, you know, significantly enough to take another run. The second thing they can do is try to revive the old conference center plan. That was an aggregation of parcels down there in an attempt to build a even bigger what you might call a true conference center. Mm-hmm. This last iteration was referred to as a conference center from time to time, but really was a fancy hotel with a couple meeting rooms.
Yeah.
But you know, conference center, the words conference center are still in general plan, so
yeah,
we're trying. And then the third thing they can do is just simply rethink, redesign. I don't think 5 years is necessary, but redesign it as a smaller hotel with some significant
historic
component.
You said that the city, maybe I misunderstood, the city has an investment in it?
Not a financial investment. What
I thought
the city
it's the Seaside
done,
Company that owns the property,
the Seaside,
right?
The Santa Cruz Seaside Company owns the property.
And it was a joint venture between Seaside Company and Carl Swenson, or is that?
Not Carl, but Barry
Swenson.
Yeah, I'm not privy to the details of the joint venture agreement, but I think it's probably 10 years or so ago that the Seaside Company decided to... They had purchased the property back in 85, so they've owned it for more than 25 years.
Right.
And they've tried a few things, but I think they thought they had a real good chance with Barry Swenson Builder, who would... reputable builder, no question about it, and well-connected in Santa Cruz. And indeed, they had permission that was granted in 2003 to build a hotel. They got all the way through it without having to go to the Coastal Commission. But they abandoned that approved project on the theory that it just wasn't financeable. It wasn't a doable project for them. It required them to...
Didn't pencil out.
It may have... Penciled out. The pencil out is just when you do the initial calculation to see if it's even in the ballpark, and it was in the ballpark, but they didn't realize until they had the approval it really doesn't make sense to go shopping for either operators or financing, because you're going to run into a committee that says, well, this isn't even approved. What are we wasting our time for? If it was approved, we'll take a look at it. So it has to be approved in order to really seriously shop for operators or lenders. And, I mean, you can get a kind of handshake deal, but if you want a real deal, you have to have it approved. And once it was approved, they shopped it, and people said, I don't know, where's the entrance? You know, and the entrance was on the side, not the front. And but yeah, there were elements of preservation that were required to be followed in the original project that made it unsaleable. And so at the point at which they came back with a subsequent project, rather than just curing that ill, they decided to get rid of preservation entirely and say, let's just start over with this thing.
That's dangerous.
Well, it's
dangerous, but I don't know if it's possible to do anything. I mean, anyhow, you're listening to the Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO. That's Don Weber in the studio with me, MZ. Nikki James is at the controls, pilot in command, and we're going to take a commercial break here. Kay's Whirling is here to sign books today. If you want to come on down, meet Kay, have a chat with her. Always fun. So do so if you're in the area. We're at 2300 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz. We're going to take this commercial break, and we will be back with more talk about La Bahia and development in general. That's what I want to get into, the development in general discussion here, right here on AM 1080 KSCO. Stay with us.
How do you make car care simple? Put all the experts you need under one roof. That's how Midas works. Whether it's oil changes, brakes, alignments, or advanced engine diagnostics, the choice is simple. Drive all over town or head to Midas, where you'll find technicians trained on state-of-the-art equipment, all in one convenient location. How's that for making car care simple? Midas. Total car care. Total customer care.
Visit us at Midas.com.
Hi, I'm Gina Locatelli. This selection from our Constitution is brought to you by the Santa Cruz County Board of Education and your friends at KSCO.
Hello, I'm Vic Morani, President of the Santa Cruz County Board of Education, with the preamble to our Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Hello, I'm Nancy Bilicich with the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense.
The Santa Cruz County Board of Education is hosting a Constitution Day essay contest for all county school ninth graders with the question, how did the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights develop our nation? Prizes include cash scholarships to $500, and winning entries will be read live on KSCO during the Santa Cruz County Fair. For details, Google Santa Cruz County Office of Education Constitution Day.
Have you ever walked on a rainbow? Have you ever had your dreams come true?
You'd never believe who sells the most hardwood floors on the Central Coast is Rainbow Carpet One. They've got the lowest prices, expert hardwood installers, and the most amazing selection of hardwood floors anywhere. Solid oaks and maples, hand-scraped floors, European parquets, eco-friendly floors, exotic species, sustainable cork, and bamboo. They'll even refinish your old hardwood floors and make them beautiful too. Plus, you can always get free financing for 1 year and free in-home estimates at Rainbow Carpet One. Nobody beats the nationwide buying power of Carpet One. Lower prices than the big box stores with 10 times the selection. Visit Rainbow Carpet One in Santa Cruz, Watsonville, and Gilroy, or shop online at rainbowcarpet1.com.
At Rainbow Carpet, you can walk on a rainbow. At Rainbow Carpet, so many colors to choose from. At Rainbow.
With support and encouragement from Bishop Richard Garcia, the traditional Latin High Mass is offered every Sunday at 8:45 a.m. at the Shrine of St. Joseph, 544 West Cliff Drive, Santa Cruz. Sacred and mystical worship in the ancient tradition of the church is presented with Gregorian chant and sacred polyphony. All are welcome. For more information, go to www.missionlatinmass.com.
Hi, I'm Andy, the produce manager at Benelman Market. This week we are featuring a 5-pound bag of Gala apples, $2.99 each. These beauties are new crop California apples. We also have new crop Bosque pears, 87 cents a pound, and sweet, juicy California yellow nectarines, $1.49 a pound. In organics, we are featuring California pluots, $1.29 a pound, California cantaloupes, 59 cents a pound, and California organic green kale, red kale, Lausitano kale, and collard greens, all 99 cents each. New items in our produce departments, Italian prunes, Concord grapes, and Italian muscat grapes. We have also received our first shipment of new crop, local grown, dried Blenheim apricots. These beauties are the best of all the dried apricots. So come and check out our great selection of fresh produce at Ben Lomond Market and Scotts Valley Market.
Don't miss the next exciting Viva Gardens, Sundays at 9 on KSCO.
This is Viva Gardens, your local gardening and outdoor living radio show with Katya, Alex, and Nikki from Nature Elements Landscapes. We specialize in design, construction, and maintenance for your garden. And we have a great show. We're going to talk about
food.
Even
Fina is excited.
Yep. And then we'll have useless information, obviously. And then we'll have
trivia.
Don't miss Viva Jardines every Sunday at 9 a.m. KSCO, Santa Cruz.
Top, he come grooving up slowly. He got juju out all he wants. Holy roller, he got hands down to his knee. Got to be a joker, he just do what he please.
Yeah, I like the original much better. Don't you?
I do like it, but this is Joe Cocker, and I think he does a great rendition.
Yeah, he is pretty good.
What'd you say, Don?
He still is.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back to Saturday Special Hour number one. We're talking about development in Santa Cruz County. I want to get into to something here in just a minute here. Let's see. What before we finish up here, about Joe Cocker. So let's finish up about Joe Cocker. That's fine. We don't need to. All right. We have Don Weber in the studio, and Don is credited with stopping the development of the La Bahia project that was proposed recently down near the beach. And we were talking during the break about something that one of our Citizens for Planning Reform compatriots, Dan Garr, person who unfortunately passed away a few months ago.
I remember Dan.
He used to characterize Santa Cruz as a prosperity-free zone because of he had a very acerbic sense of humor.
He did, indeed.
Amazing. He was a former city planner, actually, you know. Mm-hmm.
He was a DJ too.
He had a show on KUSP, I think, for many years.
Classical music.
Uh-huh.
I remember.
And so, what a character! But that was one of the many just hysterical things that he said. And I thought that made so much sense because you know nuclear free zone he said no, it's none of those. It's a prosperity free zone, and the reason is because they do the people running the place do stupid things, and there's this there's this anti-development hysteria from people regardless of their political persuasion, and that's absolutely true. Liberal or conservative, there's something about people who live in Santa Cruz County that make them detest the thought of development, unless of course you have your own property that you want to develop, and then of course you're in favor of it. But why is that? What is it about residents of Santa Cruz County that makes them so anti-development? I want to put that out and invite people to call on our phone number, which is still 713-4277. It's a temporary number because of our new studio that we're installing. We hope to get the old 479-1080 back here in the next few days or week or something like that. But for right now, in order to call the Saturday special or any of our talk shows, you'll need to call 713-4277. It's a local number. And so that will connect you to the station here, and you can go on with Don and me. Or you can send an email to mz@ksco.com. What is it? What do you think?
Well, I don't, first of all, think it's hysteria, and I don't think it's limited to Santa Cruz, but I know what you mean. We haven't developed into, the typical American way, which was to build strip malls and essentially make it look like every place else.
And I'm certainly in favor of being unique, just like this radio station is unique. But I mean, can't you do a happy medium somewhere in there?
Of course you can. And development is not a bad word. Development is something we all have to do personally and as a community, no question about it. I think there are a number of people for whom development just represents a fig leaf on growth, that the growth of the population and the depletion of its natural resources is an underlying issue that alarms them. I don't know, that hysteria is the proper word for it, but there is a caution about growing beyond our natural limits that does upset some.
Well, the only reason I said that is because it seems to me that other communities don't have the insurmountable problem this community does when it comes to developing anything. it takes an act of Congress to get a permit to build a house, particularly if you're unlucky enough to be in the coastal zone. So that you got to do what La Bahia had to do, even when they had the city behind them, right?
Well, that's true. You have to, if you need to amend the law in the coastal zone, you're going to need the Coastal Commission to approve your change. And
right.
That's a fact.
And actually, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. If something falls within the zoning and a person isn't asking, doesn't require a zoning change to do his or her development, that's where I have a problem with this thing called design review. Back in 1979, you were talking about my house on Escalona.
Sure.
It was a steep lot with a nice, beautiful view in the neighborhood where I grew up. The hoops I had to jump through, I was totally within. There was no zoning change. I was within the setbacks. I was within the height requirements, everything. But I had this. This zoning board of five idiots who didn't even know how to read a set of drawings, telling me what materials I was allowed to build my house of and what color it had to be, and I didn't think that was right, and I still don't.
No, it probably isn't.
I still don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyhow, zoning laws are a good thing, and. Otherwise, you just have a hodgepodge. I mean, planning is a good thing. Zoning laws are a good thing.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's no question that the process of has been abused over time from both sides. And
when you say both sides, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, for instance, the environmental impact report that is required now under CEQA for the last 30 or 40 years is. Often used both as a sword and a shield by people to achieve an unreasonable end. It started out its existence as a way of identifying the potential environmental impacts that a development would cause that local agencies of government might overlook in their zeal to achieve economic development.
Right.
And so state law imposed a requirement that we're going to leave the land use planning to you, but we're going to require you to obtain a report at least and deal with the results of the report so that at least you get a chance to review the significant environmental impacts of a development before you approve it.
Mm-hmm.
That has changed over time to now it's largely a blueprint for developers to use to evade the responsibility for avoiding environmental impacts.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Say that. Say that again. I don't understand. CEQA has made it so that, you know, that's a good way to kill something is get, you know, make
well,
sure
again, there you're talking about its use in the hands of people who wish to magnify the significance of a potential impact to the point where they destroy the opportunity to develop. And it has been used that way, I'll grant you. But it's,
there are those who think that that's being used right now to destroy the Santa Cruz County Fairgrounds. Are you familiar with that controversy?
I've read a little bit about it.
KSCO has jumped on that because we've been running promos from various of our personalities here. Apparently there's some people around in and around who live in and around the fairgrounds who, and we've done a program just like you and I are doing now, a Saturday program about a month or two back. Inviting some of those people who were upset that the impact of the fairgrounds on the neighboring on the neighborhood seems to be magnifying, because when they first bought their houses or moved their houses there or whatever, they knew that there was a fairground there. But the fairgrounds weren't used as much as they are now for various activities, you know, like races and car automobile racing more than just one night a week and so forth. So
they've expanded the use, they're claiming is adversely impacting the neighbors.
Adversely impacting the environment. And so they've sued them and they filed a CEQA, you know, violation suit, which a lot of people feel is just a way to get them to get the fair to be mired in legal fees so that they don't have any operating capital or revenue, and that the property will end up having to be closed because there's no money to run the fair. And I think there's a very strong possibility that that is the motivation of the people out there. I mean, people, it's so, I don't know. Someone wants to...
Well, it's not that difficult to obtain a judgment in a CEQA case, so it really shouldn't be that expensive. And it will be interesting to see what...
You have a background in law, right? Which we haven't...
I was a lawyer for years,
uh-huh.
But I haven't practiced now for many years.
What kind of law was your specialty when you were?
I was a real estate attorney.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so the laws were very different then, if it's been many, many years.
Yeah, in the early 90s, I retired.
Right. Okay, what do you do now?
Because
most people just say no.
I read a lot.
Okay. Most people I know who have, quote, retired say mm-hmm. that they're busier now than they were when they were working.
I'm busier now than when I was working.
Oh, okay. Where did I hear that? Yeah, that's Don Weber. So we're talking about development, and no one seems to want to weigh in on that, so I guess nobody cares. I think it's just a fascinating.
Well, you know, many,
I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Many people showed up at the Coastal Commission hearing. I've been to many Coastal Commission hearings. I follow the Coastal Commission fairly closely. And many people showed up, more than 100, I think, showed up in support of the city's application to change the law, in support of the project. And I think
why do you think the city was supportive of tax revenues that it would have generated? Or?
Yeah, in general. It's the city, like I say, has been trying to build a hotel on the beach since the Dream Inn edition in the early 70s. You will recall the effort in Lighthouse, and
sure.
There's been a dream.
That's what started the environmental anti-development movement.
Redevelopment, so-called Coast Hotel project that went up and then went down. And there's been four or five attempts to build one on the La Bahia parcel. And from time to time, there's the question of whether or not the old Casa del Rey lot should be revived as something more than a parking lot and house a... It's a seven-acre parcel, so it could definitely house any sized conference center. But again, all of those lots have certain problems with them. And if you really want a conference center, and it's an open question whether that's a good idea or not. Now we have a conference center on Ocean Street that just locked its doors over the weekend, I think. But assuming that a conference center is a good idea, and I'm willing to entertain the possibility that it is, maybe the beachfront lots are not the place for it. Maybe there's another lot, another parcel closer to the interior, just a little farther away from the beach that could be found. Because clearly there are problems with trying to... There was clearly problems trying to squeeze it onto the La Bahia parcel. That's a parcel with serious site constraints. It's in a primarily residential area, and it has a 30,000-square-foot historic structure on it. Yes, you can bulldoze that, but...
Can you bulldoze an historic structure?
Well, if you change enough laws and get enough approvals, you can. And they almost had it, but the Coastal Commission action is, at least arguably, put a halt to that. The demolition permit that the city issued back in April of 2009 was conditioned on pulling building permits for the new hotel. And since the new hotel was effectively stopped by the Coastal Commission action, the building permits can't be pulled, and therefore the demolition permit can't be pulled. Whether or not the legal framework is in place to allow them to demolish it under some other circumstance, we'll see. I think it'd be interesting going forward, regardless of which way we travel toward what ultimate hotel design, to see whether or not, now that demolition is off the books, at least for a while, whether the Santa Cruz Seaside Company will finally repair and maintain the building. They've allowed it to deteriorate to the point where it's an eyesore, and I think it's fair to say that worked in their favor, in the sense that enough people saw it, they'd say, gee, they ought to tear that thing down. But now that, and I guess that's a legitimate excuse. It's a pretty weak one, in my view. But especially when, you know, on the other hand, they say, we have millions of visitors to this area. We should build something there we can be proud of. Well, we should, at the very least, repair and maintain what's there so that those millions of visitors don't scratch their head and say, what's wrong with this town? That's a postcard for the beach area,
yeah.
You know? So it'd be interesting to see whether or not the owners will either of their own volition or by virtue of the city council finally getting some spine, require them to maintain the property at a level that befits the making an impression on those millions of visitors that come to our town every year.
Right.
That's the area they come to.
Well, so what do you mean that city develop? What did you say? Develop the spine to require the owner to maintain it to just minimum standards or something, right?
Being maintained at minimum standards, but the minimums are so low that unless you're an obvious health and safety violator,
yeah.
The city throws up its hands and says, oh, nothing we can do. We're helpless.
Is there something they could do, and is there something they should be able to do?
Don't you think so?
Gee, now you're getting into something that, I mean, for the good of the community, yes. But that really tramples on, you know,
private
property rights. Now, if you were the owner of that property and you had plans to do something with it, and you were dealing with Santa Cruz, which is what you have to deal with, you know, people in Santa Cruz, the government, the planning departments and agencies, the government agencies, the Coastal Commission. If you were doing that, How would you react to someone telling you that, no, you can't do this, can't do that, can't do this, can't do that, can't do this, can't do that. But you have to maintain it better than it is right now. I know how I would react. Mm-hmm. How would you react?
Well, it would depend on what I would have to do and what the state it was in and what it represented to me and
what,
to
what
the
do
community.
You think?
It's not a,
what do you
it's not
think?
A black and white answer to that question.
What do you think the city should require the Seaside Company to do with that property in terms of maintenance that it apparently isn't doing now? What do you think? You're just one person.
I am just one person. Yeah. I think.
But you probably represent the values and.
I think they ought to repair and maintain it. I don't think we should require them to renovate it in any specific way that makes us feel good. It's their property. Mm-hmm. But it's more than just private property. It's a landmark that stands as kind of an iconic faceplate for that high-profile tourist area.
This building that you're in, Don, the KCO building.
And a beautiful building.
Yes, has been declared an historic structure.
Really?
Not a national historic structure, not a state historic structure, a local historic structure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have a problem with that.
Does that limit you in any way?
It limits me totally. My hands are totally tied. I can't do diddly squat with this this property other than what I've done with it, and I think that's horrible. It doesn't happen that I even want to do anything different. But if I did, I'd be pretty mad. I'm pretty irritated. By the way, 713-4277. If you want to call, it looks like we do actually have a caller here. I was beginning to wonder.
If your mic was on.
Well, no, I mean, I know that people don't call for two reasons, for one of two reasons. They're not interested in the discussion or they're riveted by the discussion. And I don't think there's anything else here. Anyhow, if you want to give us a call, 713-4277, we have Don in Santa Cruz. Hey, Don, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to recommend that at some point you do a show on the Coastal Commission, its excesses, its overreach, and the politics. It's absolute lunacy what the Coastal Commission's involved in, the kinds of authority it seems to have acquired. It's none of the Coastal Commission's business about La Bahia construction. That's a city-county issue. And
it does fall within the coastal zone, though, and that's why they have taken jurisdiction.
I know. Yeah. I think that's what you should do a show on.
Well, we have, actually, but yeah. Okay, let's do it. We actually did a program. If you Google KSCO and Coastal Commission, it'll probably take you to the podcast of this particular show that we did, I don't know, maybe a year ago or 10
intent
months
of the
ago.
Voters was not to have Coastal Commission tell homeowners or builders what color to paint their building, whether rocks could be installed on a beach to protect the homeowner's property from vanishing, like in the Mercury News yesterday,
yeah.
Whether or not La Bahia, which gets shot down by the Coastal Commission, can expand or not. That's none of their business. That's not the intent of the voters of California in the 70s when that coastal access law was passed. It's out of control.
Is it anybody's business, like the city planners, for example?
Well, I'm talking not about what you do as a city or a county to authorize a demolition, a reconstruction, an improvement of a property, whatever. I'm talking about what the hell does a coastal commission have to do with anything but coastal access? It's getting into environmentalism.
It's
getting into aesthetics. It's getting into everything it has no business being in.
Okay, Don in Santa Cruz, thank you. Stay on the line. Don Weber, you have a response to Don on the phone here.
Hey, I understand the sentiment. The Coastal Act, however, does provide for extensive sets of coastal resources that the commission is empowered and indeed has the duty to protect. And among them are the aesthetic, scenic, values that proposed development in the coastal zone will have on the coastal zone statewide. So it's more than access. Access is certainly part of it. The fear that drove the voters to approve Prop 20 that many years ago was a fear of overdevelopment and private interests more or less closing off the California coast to the
Hey, to interrupt here. I want to continue this next hour, but we're already spilling into the news. It's KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. Stay with us. We will be back in about 6 minutes. Stand the line, Don.
Water level is getting topped by angry, frothy salt water, which is pulling the framework into its grasp.
Fox News Radio's Evan Brown in Atlantic Beach, North Carolina. The massive storm has weakened just a bit as it rumbles up the Atlantic seaboard. Let's go live to the National Hurricane Center in Miami and Fox News Radio's Kirsten McNary.
Chris, Hurricane Irene sustained winds still near 85 miles per hour, and she's forecast to stay at hurricane strength over the mid-Atlantic. Parts of New York and New Jersey already getting plenty of rain in the past couple of weeks.
These rains associated with the storm on already saturated ground are going to produce a very, very serious flood threat. I think that's going to be one of the stories about the storm. And the other will be the storm surge flooding, 4 to 8 foot above normal tide levels in the mid-Atlantic states and southern New England.
Hurricane forecaster Todd Kimberland says Irene's moving slowly, which means the nasty weather could be long-lasting, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Kirsten. The rebel army in Libya consolidating its hold on the country as the hunt for Muammar Gaddafi goes on. Fox News Radio's Alistair Wanklin is live in Tripoli.
That's right, Chris. And the rebels say they now need cash fast to pay salaries here and restore services like police and fuel supply. Also, businesses like bakeries are unable to operate because of a lack of water, tap water. Still no sign of Gaddafi. There is a fight now for the city of Sirte. But even here in Tripoli, there is still some fighting. From time to time, automatic rifle fire. And today, occasional detonations like salvos of rockets. At least twice today, NATO jets were overhead.
Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Hey, where can you get the completely unpredictable and somewhat questionable podcast that you simply won't want to miss?
And it's from the guys who are on Fox News Channel late at night, talking smack about today's events.
Yep, it's Red Eye with Andy Levy, Bill Schultz, and me, Greg Gutfeld, all of whom you can see at 3 a.m. Eastern, midnight West on Fox News Channel.
And now you can check out our podcast every day.
Just go to foxnewsradio.com and click on the Red Eye logo or search for Red Eye Podcast on iTunes. The Red Eye Podcast, anytime you want it, at foxnewsradio.com or iTunes.
Fox Business. The only team giving you the power to prosper. Liz Klayman.
To get people the information they need to make the most of their money.
David Esmond.
I have to admit there's nothing I like better than working for the viewers.
Jerry Willis.
How to make the best financial decisions no matter what's going on in the economy.
Eric Pooling.
We dig deeper to get the truth behind the headline.
Neil Cavuto.
That's how I do business. That's why I am business.
Only on the Fox Business Network. The power to prosper.
While Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and Philadelphia are all bracing for Irene's worst, it's New York City and its 8 million people commanding a lot of attention as the storm is on track for a direct hit there. Hundreds of thousands have been ordered to evacuate coastal areas. Fox News Radio's Todd Starnes taking the temperature of Brooklyn residents as they prepare for the worst, and he joins us live.
Chris, it's pretty quiet in Brooklyn. A few store windows are boarded up, but most of the action is inside the supermarkets and the neighborhood drugstores.
I have medical supplies. I have Band-Aids. I have a flashlight.
Bread and water seem to be the hottest commodities. No sense of panic here, though. As a matter of fact, several restaurants are still open serving brunch, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Irene now believed responsible for at least 3 deaths in North Carolina. Some 8,000 airline flights have been canceled on the eastern seaboard. President Obama, meanwhile, is back in D.C. after cutting his Martha's Vineyard vacation short. He dropped in on the Federal Emergency Management Agency's command center in D.C., telling the workers there it's not just dealing with the storm itself that mandates effective response.
Obviously, we're going to have to make sure on the response and recovery phase that we are just as effective and on top of it. But fortunately, because I think of the strong relationships that have been formed now, they don't seem to be hesitant about asking.
The center helps coordinate the government's response to the hurricane. Japan's government still struggling to come to grips with the aftermath of the Fukushima nuclear plant disaster. The government there warning today that the areas surrounding the plant could remain uninhabitable for decades due to high radiation levels. Well, the death toll from yesterday's car bomb attack at the United Nations headquarters in Nigeria, the capital of Nigeria, has risen to 19. The president of Nigeria, Goodluck Johnson, visiting the scene of the explosion today. He's promising to deal with the radical Muslim sect that's claiming responsibility for the blast. I'm Chris Hanley, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. Morning clouds and fog, then mostly sunny this afternoon. High of 76. North-northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight's going to be mostly clear. Low of 56. North winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Sunday, morning clouds and fog, then mostly sunny. High of 78. North-northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Out there on the Monterey Bay, the southwest winds are 5 knots. They're going to become west 10 to 20 this afternoon. The wind waves less than 2 feet, becoming 3 to 4 feet in the afternoon with a west swell of 4 feet at 8 seconds. Tonight, west winds 5 to 15 knots, wind waves 1 to 3 feet, west swell 3 to 4 feet at 8 seconds. And tomorrow, west winds 5 to 15 knots, wind waves 1 to 3 feet, west swell 2 to 3 feet at 10 seconds. Got some current temperatures here for you. Looks like we've got Monterey at 55 degrees. In Salinas, it's 58. And in Watsonville, 61. We're at 58 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSCO Studios. For your KSCO King of the Hill traffic update, nothing major to report right now. If you see something out there, you can call me at 475-1080. The official time is 11:06 and 46 seconds on this Saturday, August 27th. Up next, the second hour, Saturday special. Stay tuned. KSCO Santa Cruz, I'm Nikki James.
Hi, Nikki James.
Well, hello.
You're still Nikki James, just like you were an hour ago.
Huh? You're right. I don't know how that happens. It's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. What is it, Ma? I can't hear. What? The county fair? What about the county fair? Huh? Talk about the county fair? Oh.
Talk
okay.
about it.
Okay.
To talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think what we're going to do right now is it wouldn't be the second hour if we didn't started off officially with that, you know, sexy woman, you know,
with the ringing telephone and everything.
Got to do that. Then we're going to do Kay's latest commentary. Then we're going to come back with Don in Santa Cruz. And I think we're going to get into a brawl.
All right.
With Don, because Don here in the studio doesn't agree with Don on the telephone here.
All right. Get out the boxing gloves. Okay. Let's do it.
That's good. Okay. This is great. So here we go here. Okay, KSCO has the inside track, as it should. Welcome to hour number two of the Saturday special. We got Don Weber here. We're talking about development. We got Don in Santa Cruz on the phone line.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
George Carlin was an American stand-up comedian, social critic, and author who won 5 Grammy Awards for his brilliant comedy. He was born in 1937 and died in 2008. He wrote The Paradox of Our Time. It is so full of truth and wisdom and surely worth repeating. We have taller buildings but shorter tempers, wider freeways but narrower viewpoints. We spend more but have less. We buy more but enjoy less. We have bigger houses and smaller families, more conveniences but less time. We have more degrees but less sense, more knowledge but less judgment, more experts yet more problems, more medicine but less wellness. We drink too much, smoke too much, spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too fast, get too angry, stay too late, get up too tired, read too little, watch TV too much, and pray too seldom. We have multiplied our possessions, but reduced our values. We talk too much, love too seldom, and hate too often. We have learned how to make a living, but not a life. We have added years to life, not life to years. We have been all the way to the moon and back, but we have trouble crossing the street to meet a new neighbor. We conquered outer space, but not inner space. We have done larger things, but not better things. We have cleaned up the air, but polluted the soul. We have conquered the atom, but not our prejudice. We write more, but learn less. We plan more, but accomplish less. We learn to rush, but not to wait. These are the times of fast foods and slow digestion, big men and small character, steep profits and shallow relationships. These are the days of two incomes but more divorce, fancier houses but broken homes. A time when technology can bring this letter to you, and a time when you can choose either to share this insight or to just hit delete. Remember, spend some time with your loved ones because they're not going to be around forever. Remember, say a kind word to someone who looks up to you in awe because that little person soon will grow up and leave your side. Remember to give a warm hug to the one next to you because that's the only treasure you can give with your heart and it doesn't cost a cent. Remember to say, I love you to your partner and loved ones. For KSCO, this is Kay's Whirling.
Way to go, Ma. If you want a
requested book of Kay's commentaries is now available for purchase online at our KSCO.com website, right on the homepage, for $24.95 plus shipping and handling if applicable. Treat yourself to this wonderful book full of Kay's wisdom, thoughts, and humor. It makes a great gift, and all proceeds support KSCO, your favorite radio station. Go to KSCO.com and buy Kay's book today.
And then come on down to 2800 Portola Drive and have Kay sign the book for you. Pretty cool, huh? Great idea. And you can get to talk to her. All right. Welcome to the meat of hour number two of the KSCO Saturday special. Before we went to the break, we were talking with Don in Santa Cruz. Don, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. All righty, you were saying that the Coastal Commission is really sort of pushing its way into things that it has no business pushing its way into.
The Coastal Commission is a political body staffed by political appointees, including overwhelmingly leftist appointees like our local leftist loser, Mark Stone. That's what this has become, an environmentalist body, not assuring my access to the coast. That's why I voted for Prop 20 years and years and years ago.
I think it was 1972, was it?
Whenever. But I didn't vote for that proposition so that a commission could tell me what color to paint my house, or if I lived on a cliff and the ocean tides were eroding that cliff and my property was vanishing, like in the Mercury News yesterday, Coastal Commission said it wasn't serious enough for the homeowner to be allowed to put boulders at the base of the cliff. She's standing in her backyard in a picture in the Mercury News, and she's got about 20 feet left. And the commission says it's not serious enough. So they don't want boulders on the precious beach. So what does her home have to do? Start falling off before they allow her to, in their infinite environmental wisdom, to put boulders at the bottom of the cliff? And what does that have to do with coastal access? I'll tell you what. When her house is gone, somebody can have a better view and possibly walk down to the beach where her house used to be. That's not what this act was intended to be. It's a leftist environmental political action body. It needs to be changed, but the law won't, I'm sure, in this environment, in this state. But it's wrong.
Telephone Don in Santa Cruz makes a very compelling argument. Guest Don Weber here in the studio. What do you say to that? Do you have an answer? Because you were sort of rolling your eyes a little bit.
Well, I can't really speak to the Mercury article. I don't know about it. I know that seawalls in general are a real big issue for the commission, and they come up at almost every meeting, but the idea that the reason that you voted for the law to ensure your access to the beach was the only valid reason for voting for it is probably a bit limiting. The Coastal Act that the commission is enforcing talks about a large range of coastal resources that the commission is designed to protect. Among them is public access to the coast. But that's only one of many coastal resources that the commission is charged with protecting and preserving. And as far as telling you what color to paint your building, I don't know. I've been watching the Coastal Commission for a long time. I've never seen that one come up.
See, the local people do that. The local planning departments do that, Don, in Santa Cruz. But I'm no fan of the Coastal Commission any more than you are, believe me.
Well, look at the La Bahia development.
Okay.
After, you know, for it to have gotten approval to do what was going to be done in this community shocked me. Although I supported it, that this community, county, city, whatever, gave it permission to expand, remodel, add some height. I was pleased at that. I was surprised that it would happen. Then the Coastal Commission comes in and overrides everything. What in the hell does a Coastal Commission have to do with whether a neighbor on that slope can see properly, or have their view altered, or whatever, or question the permits that are given by the city, county, whatever? That's not their role. That's an existing structure. It's been approved per certain codes or what have you about what has to be done in this city and this county. That's an accomplishment in its own right. Then the Coastal Committee comes in, or commission comes in, and overlays its environmental, political sensitivities and whatever, and aesthetics and whatever. Where in the heck is that appropriate? I'm not arguing that the Coastal Commission isn't enforcing the law. Change the law, because this Coastal Commission, staffed with political leftist appointees like Mark Stone, you know, they're going to breathe into it, and give it a life of its own, which has become the case. As I recall, there were all kinds of people protesting in Southern California about wealthy property owners, especially in the Malibu area, blocking access to beaches by the public, like the low-life public that wants to come across my property line and get access to the high tide area of the beach in Malibu. And the Coastal Act, you know, provided for access, and that's fine. But not what it's doing in terms of environmentalism, the religion of environmentalism, the liberalism of environmentalism. That's not what this was about. And the law may be the law, and I'm not an expert on the law in terms of your guest, knowing about all those provisions, and I'm not arguing the commission isn't pursuing what it's chartered to pursue, but what it's chartered to pursue is wrong. It's wrong. That's not why I voted for that act or that proposition, and to get itself involved in what it's getting itself involved in is wrong. It has
no
business.
Do you think the Coastal Commission should be dismantled?
It should be radically changed. And there should be some better way than leftists to appoint leftists to that commission. It is not balanced politically because it's a political commission. And if it's an environmental position, commission, it already means, as an environmental commission, it's a liberal commission in this state, in this country, this county. That's by definition almost. So how do you...
Would you argue with that, Don Weber?
Well, it's hard to argue that the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Act are not environmentally charged. That's the whole idea.
And that all of the members are leftists.
I don't know that that's true.
Almost all.
Well, there's a great turnover on the commission. They are appointed by politicians. They're not elected to that office, although half of them are elected officials. But they are appointed by politicians in Sacramento. But to
our control Sacramento, who owns Sacramento and has for decades? Not the Republicans, not conservatives.
No, I would suggest it's probably the electorate of California controls Sacramento. At least indirectly, we vote for them every 4 years and
we know
put them
who the
in office.
Are in California.
Well, it's the electorate. It's sort of how democracy works, I think. And
well, that's why it won't change. You know, I'm just spouting off here. It's not going to change. It's wrong, though.
The personnel of the commission do change quite often. There's quite a turnover on the commission, and but to expect it to somehow not be an environmentalist to protect the environment on the coast is, I think, to expect the impossible of the commission, to somehow turn itself into a commission that only allows for access to the beach by the public and not enforce all of the coastal protections that it's duty bound to enforce is probably, however it's staffed, a wish too far on your part.
It has its nose into too much that is not its business, that is not regarding environmental protection. Putting boulders to protect my property, who's going to protect my property? You know, who's going to take care of me losing my lot if I live on the cliff above the ocean? The Coastal Commission, because in its sense of aesthetics or whatever, won't allow boulders? Who's to say that a private sector, private landowner, private entrepreneur, risk taker, whoever it is behind the La Bahia development, shouldn't be allowed to improve it, to make it a better asset, or it should only be allowed to do what it wants to do if it meets the political sensitivities, environmental sensitivities of the Coastal Commission. That's insane.
Well, that's what the Coastal Act requires, the Coastal Commission to approve any changes to the local coastal program. You said before that the developer was in line with all of the local coastal program, but that's not true.
It was in line with the city and county's requirements. Then the Coastal Commission came in.
Then the city changed the requirements, and the Coastal Commission must, by law, approve those changes. And it was those changes, not the development or the details of the development per se, that the Coastal Commission was acting on. It was acting on the changes to the zoning law that the city requested in order to allow an outsized development, whereas before it would have been limited to a lesser envelope size. It was changing that law on the city's part, and then granted approving it under those changes that caused the Coastal Commission to have jurisdiction in the first place. Had the city simply issued a coastal development permit under the current local coastal program for a hotel there, the Coastal Commission would only have had jurisdiction if someone appealed it, and I'm not sure anyone would have appealed it. But because they changed the law, because they changed the rules, because they gave the developer essentially his own zone within coastal zone, the Coastal Commission is charged automatically with approving that or disapproving that change in the law, and they disapproved it after listening to the arguments.
The Coastal Commission then owns all zoning ordinances, building codes, and what have you. And if I'm a builder, and I'm an investor, and I'm a property improver, why in God's name do I want to put my money and my time and my resources at risk going through all the multiple hurdles that this city and this county can impose upon me, and then have to stand trial in front of a coastal commission full of leftist, environmentalist, wacko yahoos who are appointed and not elected, and who are sitting there to maximize the environmentalist aspects of every word and every sentence and every paragraph of an act. That is insane. I'll take my money elsewhere, and this city can have a rundown hotel or a rundown this or that business or a rundown anything, and let wallow in the beauty of its rundown environment, its rundown assets, which produce the tax revenue and other revenue that fund the lunacy in this city and this county. I don't need that. I'd go elsewhere.
I'm going to give you an award for being the best caller of this show. Of course, you're the only caller of this show up until now, but really, Don in Santa Cruz, have you called the station before, or is this seems to be a pretty...
I've talked in the past, not a frequent caller.
Okay, well, appreciate that you called.
Sometimes my ire gets up, like when I saw this article of this poor woman whose house is vanished. I mean, her property is vanishing, then her house is going to vanish, and these yahoos come up with, it's not critical enough. Go look at yesterday's Mercury, well, maybe it was nice. Go look at the picture. She's there in her backyard. It's vanishing. And she can't be allowed to put boulders or whatever to retard the tidal actions on the cliff below her that's being undercut.
And the reason?
Because it was, the rocks weren't necessary yet. The boulders weren't necessary. The situation wasn't critical enough in the esteemed opinion of the Coastal Commission.
Don, I mean, you gotta go along with this.
Yeah, well,
if what he says is true, you can't shrug your shoulders and say this is reasonable what they're doing. You can't do that.
Go online, look at it's Mercury News. I get it every day. I read it every day.
Sure. Well, you have to look at the details of the case. I'd be happy to do that, but I can't say it's unreasonable or reasonable without knowing exactly what happened in the case. There, as I say, seawalls and constructions to prevent erosion are an ongoing battle on the Coastal Commission agenda, meeting after meeting. I'm not familiar.
I'm just wondering why it should have to be.
Why?
What's wrong with the person protecting his or her property from erosion? If they're willing to spend the money and able to, why should some government agency prevent them from doing so?
The act was about access, not about helping me protect my own property, which I pay the taxes on, which I maintain, and which nature is taking. And we put rocks and boulders, and I'm not talking seawalls, which might change the aesthetics, although I don't have a problem with that either. But, you know, this is my property.
I don't think it's aesthetics.
And how do I have the government that I support, you know, vacate my responsibility to protect my property by inserting itself as being more knowing?
Don, I would appreciate it if you would send me an email, mz@ksco.com, with contact information, please.
Yeah.
I didn't
mean to change your subject.
You haven't changed it at all. This is what I wanted. You've livened it up, and that's exactly what we wanted. So thank you very much for your call to the Saturdays, and please send me an email. I would like to get in touch with you.
By the way, when you do revitalize any discussion on your show about the Coastal Commission, get builders in.
Yeah.
Get stakeholders. Get the people who have dealt with the commission in, and you will find for your guest Don all kinds of examples that I've heard of from builders I've talked to about the hurdles, the minefields, and the lunacy they go through with the Coastal Commission.
Right. That's one reason why I really want you to I want to contact you. It sounds like you have great resources and can just at least help us be pointed in the right direction. So to do a not only one Saturday special, but I want to do a series of programs, because I think the California Coastal Commission should be dismantled itself.
I wouldn't mind
it. But I agree with Don here that in 1972, the people voted for Prop 20, I think it was, that established the Coastal Commission. Now, I tend to side with you on this one, Don in Santa Cruz on the telephone. That it was more about access than it was about controlling people's lives.
Yeah, I didn't think it was about controlling people's lives.
Yeah.
I voted for that act based on access, not on the words that were buried in it, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't read the act. I voted on it for what we all voted for, access to the coast.
Right.
Well, the act came later.
Thank you much. mz@ksco.com, please. Thank you. That was Don in Santa Cruz. Here's Richard N. Watsonville. Richard, you're on the air.
Thank you, Michael. That vote was taken in 1972, you said?
Yes, and I think it was implemented in 76, if I'm not mistaken.
The Coastal Act. It was backfilled. The proposition created the commission, but they didn't have a Coastal Act until the legislature backfilled it in a subsequent term and gave the Coastal Act a constitution or a charter on which to act.
Yeah.
So that was the start of it, in other words.
Yeah, that's right.
Where we're at right now. I mean, right now we got the Coastal Commission giving Fresno $11 million to build an aquarium, a fish aquarium. So that's some of the things the Coastal Commission does. But I would like to know who owns that property where the Casa del Rey used to be.
That's also the Seaside Company, the same owner as the boardwalk and the La Bahia.
Okay. If that's the case, then why doesn't the Seaside Company fix that up before they even think about the La Bahia? I don't understand. Why just leave an empty space in the ground over there?
Well, it's parking.
It's valuable space.
Yeah, it's parking, but it's not decent parking, is it?
It's surface. It's a 7-acre surface parking lot for the boardwalk, and it's filled to the gills in the summer, and it's not filled at all in the off season.
We're talking about a conference center. Do something with that corner lot across the street from there. Like you said, down at the where the university place is at, and have a damn monorail or something going to the beach. Because I remember when everybody was fighting about a conference center out of Lighthouse Field.
Mm-hmm.
And look at it now. It's all full of doggies. Hell, the dogs could even go downtown now. So I guess the last caller was right.
I think I wonder what Santa Cruz would have been like if Lighthouse Field would have become a conference center, like Doubletree in Monterey.
Well, how about a racetrack?
That's crazy, Richard. That's crazy. That's nuts.
You remember all the school buses out there?
Yeah.
You remember all the people living out there in the field?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Which is crazier?
I think people living in the field probably. Anyhow, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. That was Richard N. Watsonville. By the way, a lot of people are calling the old phone number, 479-1080. Don't do that. Don't do that. You're not going to get through. You got to call the new phone number, at least the temporary new phone number, which is 713-4277. If that's too hard for you to dial, you can try 477-1340, and that'll probably connect you to our new system here. One of these days, oh, my God, the board is getting lit up now. This is what we like. This is what we like. Yeah. Yeah, Don, I don't understand. What happened last hour? Nobody was calling.
They just woke up.
Does people wake up? They don't wake up until 11 o'clock or 11:15 on the weekend?
I'm not sure of that.
I think
Don woke them up.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
All right, we've got Mo in the mountains coming up here. Mo, welcome to KSCO. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you, MZ.
Hey.
Listen, before I get into telling you why you're just spinning your wheels, I'd like to make a mea culpa. I called the station twice, very much alarmed because the ecology where I live had totally crashed. Just the birds are gone, the insects are all gone. I jumped to the conclusion, and I'm sorry if I alarmed anybody, the only thing I could think of was Fukushima. I called my daughter in the Central Valley, or my granddaughter, and asked her. She said, no, the birds are fine, but all the bees are dead. So I jumped to the conclusion it must be Fukushima, and then after a few days I thought, geez, that's really dumb.
Fukushima.
If it was strong enough to kill the insects, it sure as heck would have killed us long since. Anyway, I apologize for alarming anybody, but I want to assure you, my place is exactly as I described it. There's not a bird, I get the occasional fly now. And after a few days, I didn't hear anybody talking about it, so I called my neighbors, and I was absolutely astonished when they told me that everything appeared normal at their place. And one of them came up here to see if I had gone crazy or not, and he saw what I see. Anyway, I have no explanation. I just want people to know I haven't gone around the bend. Let me tell you why you folks, year after year after year, just keep spinning your wheels, and nobody ever listens to me. I called you about 3 weeks ago and explained why you couldn't possibly elect anybody. I gave you chapter and verse on how the vote was privatized in 1964. It was given to 5 or 6 men or families who own the major media, who certainly are the same people who own the Federal Reserve and everything else. And I never heard a single solitary person even mention it. People, don't you realize what I'm saying? If they have the vote, they not only elect the Congress and the White House, and they appoint the Supreme Court, and those people appoint the bureaucracy, and they elect the mayors who appoint the police chiefs, and they elect the sheriffs. And they've had almost 50 years to consolidate their hold. I said, any wonder we are where we are? The only way we're getting out of this is if you people get off your backsides, and if you shills that call this station for the New World Order stop doing that and do some research, you'll find...
Shills? Shills? What did you say?
I think that's totally reasonable. I mean...
I'm sorry, Mo in the mountains. I'm sorry. That's offensive. Shills.
Hundreds of billions of dollars.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself for suggesting that shills call KSCO.
And with the,
unless you're a shill. Are you a shill?
No, I'm the opposite. Anyway, the only way to get it back is to have an honest vote is to have the ballots dropped into a clear plastic ballot or barrel and then have cameras mounted above all of the counting stations with monitors right there in the polling station with anybody walking come in and do it yourself or tape it themselves. And if you want to go home and run it in slow motion to see if they did the thing, honestly, that's the only way to do it, folks. The only way.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. There goes Ben in the mountains.
I'm
Here's the NIST call.
That one, Mike.
Next call. What'd you say, Don?
I'm going to let you handle that one, but I'll address Rich's point about the building on the Casa del Rey lot later when you take
Okay. Well, here comes the next caller. We have this button that says next, and I just pushed it for the first time, and it looks like it's put Ben in Salinas, the great Ben in Salinas, on the air. Is that true?
This is the great Ben, and good morning to you, Michael.
Hi.
You know, I think we can agree, gentlemen, that the Coastal Commission only exists to serve itself and the powerful political people that have given these people those authority positions.
Don's not going to agree to that, are you, Don?
Well, okay. Case in point, I'll make my case. Year after year after year, the city of Pacific Grove regularly dumps its raw sewage into the Pristine Bay. Can we agree? Are you up on the news or not? How many sewage spills do we have into Lover's Cove, Steps Point, or Rocky Point up there where they have the sewage outfalls? Yet they bless that. They don't do nothing about it.
Ben and Salinas, the great Ben and Salinas, what you have done is devalued that property now. Because there are people like me who didn't know that. And I'm assuming that you're telling the truth here.
Well, I mean, with the code enforcement officer in Pacific Grove, they run around monitoring garage sales. People trying to make $10 to pay the taxes that they owe the city. That city is so corrupt they can't even afford their own police department. They're having to beg Monterey to merge with them. Now, bring it back home to Santa Cruz. Yeah, I spent many years in the area. My question about the Bahia, because I am also a property owner. Is that building up to code? I mean, structurally, the plumbing and the electrical fixtures, is it up to code?
I don't know. I don't think Don knows.
I doubt it. It's an old building. I'm sure it's not.
Yeah, when you mean up to code, you mean current code. God, nothing's up to current code. Something that was built a year ago is not up to code, probably.
Why are you paying a code enforcement officer? I mean, if people up in Boulder Creek
are going
to start to know, if your building is not up to code or they find something wrong with your property, they red tag it. And what happens if you don't deal with that red tag issue? You're talking eminent domain. Bye-bye. Is anybody looking at the legal act? This is not a leftist issue, that last caller, Don, whatever his name was. This is another we the people issue. The Coastal Commission, the concept was the privilege, serving the privilege, serving the privilege, selling their influence so you can have it the way you want it.
I remember when it first passed in 1972, they were saying that anybody who's fortunate enough to own oceanfront property has become instant millionaire overnight, you know, on June 7th or whatever, the day after the election. So.
Well, you know what, Michael, you've got your life and blood right there into much of this property, and damn it, you have the right, it's your property. Why do we call it your home and you have the right in your castle, Hey, if it's yours, you should live there the way you want to live. Ain't no person of questions should tell you how to live on your own. You paid the taxes.
No, I'm finished being a property owner. Great Ben and Salinas. No, I am. I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
You're selling off all your property.
Only people who are idiots are property owners in this government that we have. It's like Gila monsters. You own property. You have a Gila monster, chomping on your arm, and they're not going to let go of it. Even if you chop the head off, it'll hang on until sundown.
And
you know?
This is not a leftist issue.
Yes. But now the only problem is I have all that much property, but whatever I do have, I better sell it pretty quick while it has any value at all. But it really hurts to it hurts.
What about the properties of Point Richmond?
What about it?
You got rid of all of them?
No, all but one.
Well, and that's where you live.
No, I live in various places.
And God bless you, Michael. Yeah. We can agree or disagree politically. This is not a leftist issue. It's not a Republican or. It's about we the people, eminent domain. The
it
right
is about us the people.
The way we want them.
All right. Thank you, Ben. Your call is always exciting. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. That was Ben and Salinas. Here comes John at the summit. John, you're on KSCO.
Yes, hi. Just called in. Let people know that it's Friday. Yesterday's San Jose Mercury News on page B3. There's that lady standing on the cliff. It's only 20 feet away. Another 3 to 5 feet is going to start cracking foundations. And I just read here that Lands Inn has offered to donate 3,000 tons of unused riprap, which is broken concrete and such. And the coast and build a 25-foot pile across the base of the cliff that spans their home, which was a historic home. But in a letter sent to Levine in early August, Coastal Commission staff said the situation at the home does not constitute an emergency yet.
Ugh. Give me a break. All right, yeah, this is starting to make me angry.
Vote conservative.
Calm down, Mike. Calm down.
Yeah. Okay, John, what should happen? Should this group be put to sleep? That's
taken out and executed.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. Seriously. No, I'm kidding around, but I'm really not kidding around. I mean, the gentleman who wants us to do a serious program about the Coastal Commission, which we have done before.
Sure.
I mean, this should become a cause celeb of KSCO. Eliminate the Coastal Commission. What the hell good is it anyhow? I mean, I know you're disagreeing with me, Don, but John at the Summit, thanks very much for your call. We have to take a commercial break. Or Nikki's going to be really, she's going to come down on me really hard, and she's the pilot in command. So
see that.
Let's do that. 713-4277 is the phone number to call. If you want to join in the conversation here, we got about 19 minutes left in hour number two of the Saturday special. So stay with us. Don't call 479-1080, which people are doing. Call 713-4277 and come on down and say hey to Kay. Because, yeah, I mean, have you ever sat down with my mother, Kay? Well, you can buy her book while you're here. You can get a bumper sticker while you're here that says listen and be heard and put it on your bumper. It's a good experience. I get to do it a lot. I get to sit down and talk with my mom a lot, but you would definitely like it. Whoever is listening to me, 831-713-4277 to, participate in the program. 2300 Portola Drive is the place to come in the next hour or so. And you can visit with Kay and buy her book. Okay, Nikki.
On Saturday, September 3rd, J&S Surplus and J&S Eagle Iron Leather Shop are proud to bring you an event that remembers America's killed in action military heroes. From 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at J&S Surplus, an outdoor store, and Eagle Iron Leather Biker Shop in Moss Landing, we'll remember our fallen heroes. Live entertainment with nationally recognized band Big Rain. A patriotic flag-raising ceremony that honors all branches of service. Great barbecue, good company, and some pretty impressive door prizes. This September will be a decade since this new war began, and we'll continue to honor our fallen heroes. This event supports the USA KIA DOW Family Foundation that supports the families of our fallen heroes. If you'd like more information, go to KIAHonorFlag.com or go to SurplusInc.com.
Thank you for calling Palace in Capitola. This is Shannon.
Hi, Palace. Do you carry school supplies?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yes. In fact, Palace carries a huge selection of school supplies.
We got a big long list from school.
Your child's teacher gave you a list? No problem. We are happy to help you find just what you need. And I think you'll like our prices, too. You know, we also have a great selection of kids' art supplies and kits that make great gifts for birthdays. And if you're an artist, well, Palace does have it all.
I don't know where we are. We just moved to town.
Oh, you just moved here? No problem. Palace stores are easy to find. In Capitola, we are on 41st Avenue next to Orchard Supply. And in Santa Cruz, Palace is next to Cinema 9 on Pacific Avenue. And we're open till 8 on weeknights. Thanks for calling. I look forward to meeting you.
Palace Art and Office Supply is a proud member of Think Local First, County of Santa Cruz.
Make it your business to see the full lineup of John Deere commercial mowers at RDO Equipment Company. Check out the new QuickTrack Pro stand-on mowers and 6 new John Deere Hydro and Gear walk-behind mowers. The QuickTracks make quick work of narrow spots and trimming, and John Deere walk-behinds are redesigned with lots of exciting new features. Come see our full line of John Deere commercial mowing equipment today at RDO Equipment Company, 501 El Camino Real South in Salinas and 1320 West Beach Street in Watsonville.
The best of the West, the original extreme sport, the Flying U Rodeo, is at this year's Monterey County Fair. Bull riding, kids mutton busting, bull poker,
live music, Hispanic rodeo, and horse shows. Join Budgie Cottontail and the Flying U Rodeo for a little horsing around this Labor Day weekend at the Monterey County Fair. Save big. Buy tickets online or Costco, August 31st through September 5th. MontereyCountyFair.com.
Hi, I'm Gina Locatelli. This selection from our Constitution is brought to you by the Santa Cruz County Board of Education and your friends at KSCO.
Hello, I'm Vic Morani, president of the Santa Cruz County Board of Education, with the preamble to our Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Hello, I'm Michael Olson, General Manager of KSCO Radio, with the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law.
The Santa Cruz County Board of Education is hosting a Constitution Day essay contest for all county school ninth graders with the question, how did the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights develop our nation? Prizes include cash scholarships to $500, and winning entries will be read live on KSCO during the Santa Cruz County Fair. For details, Google Santa Cruz County Office of Education Constitution Day.
Real estate can be really confusing these days, but we make it easy to understand on Open House Radio. Hello, I'm Renee Mello, host of Open House. Each Saturday at 2 p.m., we reach into all the neighborhoods of the local real estate market and talk our way through appraisals, financing, inspections, offers, closings, with all kinds of real estate experts. Join me, Renee Mello, for Open House Radio Saturday, 2 p.m. on KSCO.
Every Saturday from noon to 1, the Perspectives Radio Show is heard on KSCO. Every week, they interview well-known experts on a variety of topics such as holistic health, constitutional issues, and local and national issues. For example, they would like everyone in Santa Cruz County to know that the Planning Department policy of handing out red tags to thousands of homes has been declared illegal by the state of California's Sixth Court of Appeals. Listen in every Saturday from noon to 1 to Perspectives as they discuss these and many other important issues.
Okay, we're in the home stretch of the Saturday special, hour number two, with Don Weber and MZ, talking about development and Coastal Commission and so forth. Let's see, this from Rick Bowen from Spanner Systems. MZ, Mark Stone is the real problem, considering it is his district to represent. The other commissioners vote while using his recommendation like a bunch of puppets. He would rather have more homeless voters and low-income housing so he can place them in Section 8 control while he waits for the next election. This is more than apparent with his latest attempt to split Scotts Valley into two separate supervisor districts, which would silence the more conservative common sense voice that Scotts Valley is known for. And that's from Rick in Scotts Valley here. And by the way, if you want to participate via email, shoot it to me, mz@ksco.com. We're going to go back to the phone lines at 713-4277. Don't call 479-1080. Call 713-4277. We're going to take our next caller, and that will be John in Aptos. John, welcome to the Saturday special. You're on, John.
Three questions, Juan. Does the current La Bahia, or would the new La Bahia, inhibit access to the beach?
No.
Let me put your mic on.
No.
Said no. Yeah.
No.
No.
Neither. In neither case.
Does the current La Bahia or the new proposed La Bahia impact the environment?
Well, according to the findings of the Coastal Commission, it did.
In what way?
Well, it impacted the public view shed in the scenic coastal area along the coastline, It impacted the surrounding area with respect to the bulk and scale of the proposed construction. It removed the front portion of the promontory of Beach Hill, and it removed the unique characteristics of a neighborhood that is designated as a special tourist area that the Coastal Act specifically defines as such and is obligated to protect. I speak there of the unique circumstances of those neighborhoods. In all four of those areas, I think the Coastal Commission acted, whether you call that environmental protection or not, I do. I know some people think it's only redwood trees and endangered species, but the Coastal Act and indeed CEQA, all the environmental protection legislation that we have in California, has a fairly broad definition of the physical environment.
Very broad. So then Manhattan must be really doing a number on the environment. And
you had a third question.
If the height restriction would have been 10 stories, would you still have opposed the new La Bahia?
If the current zoning would have allowed for a 10-story structure there? Is that what you're suggesting?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the current zoning had allowed for a 10-story structure, there would have been no need to amend the Zoning Act, and the Coastal Commission would never have gotten involved in the question in the first place.
That's my question. My question is, would you still oppose the new La Bahia?
You know, I actually doubt that I would, because I'm one of those people who moved into the area 30 years ago, and I'm often accused of being the kind of a guy who moves next to the airport and then is surprised by the noise of the airplanes. I've always known that the La Bahia parcel was prime commercial real estate that would ultimately be developed with a hotel, and I'm kind of surprised there isn't a hotel there already. I'm just hoping that we as a city can come to agree that the kind of hotel that ought to be built there is one that conforms to the area, that is to say, is more or less in line with the scale that is existing in that area and has existed that way for over a century.
So, all right, we got to move on. We got a lot of callers. If you're on hold now, we're going to get to you. So thank you very much, John and Aptos. Hope that answered at least some of your questions, okay? Thank you. Next caller will be Norma Jean in Capitola, California. You're on, Norma Jean.
Yes, I just wanted to make a short comment just because I hear I was an activist against La Bahia, or what they were trying to, Seaside Company was trying to do with that 10 years ago. And I just wanted to remind people down there that the Seaside Company, and I think the owners of the motels down there that are asking for $100,000 each, that is planned obsolescence. They let those properties go down purposely and then have the nerve to ask the city to help them fix them up. And that's what I resent. I don't know who the owner is now, but I remember when I was an activist at Seaside Company, what they were feel was trying to do was to get the city to throw in thousands and thousands of dollars to help him fix it up. And I don't know, maybe he finally pawned it off on somebody else. But all these people down there, to ask the city now, all the other motels, what, $100,000 each to fix them up, it's absolutely ridiculous when they've skimmed off all the profits and expect the city to pay it. And also, Seaside Company at that time never paid any sales taxes for all the little stores around there did. And I don't know if that still applies, because I've always felt that was wrong. That's all I have to say today.
Thank you for saying it on KSCO. I'm not going to give out the phone number because we got all we can do to catch everybody who's on hold now. Steve in Pacific Grove, you're on KSCO.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Great topic. Your guest is awesome.
Oh yes.
I just wanted
awesome
to
guest.
Wanted to make one correction to what slander that Ben was putting out on over your airwaves.
Okay.
With the help of your signal. And his statement was the city of Pacific Grove just dumps raw sewage into the bay all the time.
Yeah, that...
And
yeah.
Do you really think that rings true in this day and age?
It doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right.
It
but you
right.
must know,
I mean,
right?
I mean, come on. That was a ridiculous statement. He knows it was a ridiculous statement, and it's an untrue statement. And I just think to let him do that without any, well, I guess I'm rebutting, but I'm not a member of the station. I could say something horrible about Ben right now and slant him, and you would just let it go?
Well, go ahead and try, and we'll see if I let it go.
No, I don't.
You're a liberal after all.
Your caller that you said was the best caller of the day because he was the only caller?
Yeah. He was the best caller of the day, and he's probably still the best caller of the day with all the others, including you.
Absolutely. I'm sure he will be because he used a lot of half-truths and excitement, and that makes good talk radio, according to you.
Okay. Now, Steve, listen. I kid around a lot, but I really, really do want people like Don and like you, who take issue with some of the reactionary, you know, conservative callers that we get to this station, you know, the Rush Limbaugh station, right? To call in, and I think we're getting more and more of those since we put in the What's Left segment in mid afternoons. Mm-hmm. So. You know, and I didn't mean anything negative to you when I said including you. I think Don was a better caller. Don was a very passionate caller.
He was a passionate caller, but he goes as far as to call, and I quote, the public lowlife that want access to the beach. Oh, so now his fellow community members are lowlife.
Wow, that one got past me. So
yeah, well, that's what he called the rest of us that would like to go to the beach is lowlife.
Malibu brings that out in people.
Does that include the Surf Rider Foundation, the Junior Lifeguards?
Did you hear our program last week? I always thought the Surf Rider Foundation was wonderful people. But according to the people that I had on last week, the Surf Rider Foundation is terrible people.
They're not terrible people. They're on the wrong. Not everybody is on the right side of the issue 100% of the time.
Yeah.
They're on the wrong side of the PWC issue, for sure. And I've been a member since 96 or something, and I totally agree with, I'm a surfer, and there needs to be an allowance for PWCs in the water.
Absolutely. Okay, good. So yeah, that NOAA and the Coastal Commission are two governmental bodies that are unaccountable and out of control. Do you agree?
No.
Okay. All righty. Well, good. So I want you to send me an email, too, because when we put together this thing, mz@ksco.com, when we put together this, I just don't want one side represented. I got to call Don back here when we have this but Coastal Commission, you know, thing that's going to be really, we're going to promo the hell out of it for, at least a week in advance.
Don hates all us other lowlife. He hates the laws of California.
No, I'm talking about this Don in the studio here. He's with you, I think.
Yeah, he's a reasonable man.
Yes, he is.
Like.
All right. So will you please email me and let me know how we can get in touch with you, mz@ksco.com. Please?
I will.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next caller, Derek and Spreckles, you're on the air. On KSCO, favorite radio station.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm on, this is Eric.
Yes.
Hello?
Hello, Eric.
Yeah. I was listening to the call. I might be the best speaker you'll have now, but the point I was getting to was, so you were talking about the Coastal Commission, and, I had several dealings with them in my professional career, and I, don't find the commissioners, because they kind of ebb and flow with the political tide of the state. However, it's the staff. Trying to get anything through the staff on a timely fashion is virtually impossible. They've never made a deadline that they've set. Ever.
Sounds like the planning department staff in the city and the county. No different from 25 years ago.
Completely. I've got a project that's 5 months late, and I have 4 apology letters from the planning staff.
Yeah. Well, at least you got an apology letter. That's better than nothing. Oh my God! Hey, I promised that we'd get William on. So thank you very much for calling, William in Santa Cruz. You're the last caller. You got about 15 seconds.
Okay, real quick. Some of the veterans are wondering if they could be moved in and have a access to veteran services while repairs are going on, because this is a great need. There's no building for them.
We got to do a whole program on that. Thanks very much. Hey, Don Weber, thanks for being with us. This program will be rebroadcast tonight between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight or on demand at KSCO.com.
It's great to see you again, Michael.
Ditto. KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. Here's Fox News. It's there somewhere, isn't it?
KSCO Santa Cruz.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley. Hurricane Irene, still a Category 1 with sustained 85-mile-per-hour winds and gusts to 100 miles per hour, now launched on its trek north, currently about 80 miles south of Norfolk, Virginia. A little further up the coast, Fox News Radio's Mitch Davis is on the eastern shore of Maryland waiting for Irene to come calling.
It's raining hard and blowing even harder here now. There are handwritten signs in the windows of many businesses with a common theme. Sorry, but we're closing this afternoon because of the hurricane. Gas stations, supermarkets, virtually everything here is shutting down. As much as the wind and the rain, people here worry about floods. Add what could easily be 10 inches of rain to the tidal surges that could slam this low-lying region with 6 feet or more of salt water, and what you have is a recipe for trouble. Chris?
All right, thanks, Mitch. Earlier, Irene made landfall in North Carolina, where Fox News Radio's Evan Brown is in Atlantic Beach joining us live.
Chris, it's amazing how fast and how strong this wind can be, but even just as amazing is how unrelenting it is. It just doesn't stop. I've spent the past few hours watching roof sheeting rip at the seams and fly up with the blasts. The wind is also very deadly. One man was crushed to death by a flying tree limb out of his own home. Two other people have died while being outside of their homes, one man from a heart attack while trying to attach plywood to his house. The other when his car veered into a tree, Chris.
All right, thanks, Evan. Air travel that involves coming to or leaving from Eastern Seaboard airports has been largely curtailed, with 8,300 flights scrapped for the weekend, 3,600 flight cancellations today alone. Train and bus service also extremely limited. U.S. officials are confirming that Al-Qaeda's second-in-command, Ataya Abd al-Rahman, has been killed in Pakistan. He's a Libyan national who had been the operational leader before becoming the new number two when Osama bin Laden was killed. Bin Laden's longtime deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, is now in charge of the group. This is Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Fox News Sunday is America's wake-up call with one of the most trusted names in politics, Chris Wallace, asking the tough questions to Washington's power players.
Was that statement by you a mistake?
Engaging America in critical debates on the biggest issues.
Let's get serious about our economic future.
And taking a look ahead to our nation's next big moves.
What should we do about Pakistan going forward?
Only Chris Wallace has America's wake-up call every Sunday on Fox News Sunday. Check your local listings.
Every night, Fox Business is the place for smart, aggressive, insightful business news. At 8, Judge Napolitano is on Freedom March.
This is about free enterprise and your right to live the American dream.
At 9, on America's Nightly Scoreboard, David Asman keeps you plugged in.
This is about winners and losers and who's really making the power moves.
And at 10, Eric Bolling is on the case. It's Follow the Money.
This is about getting the facts and exposing the truth.
This is about business in America. This is Fox Business. Check your local listings.
For the latest stats on the storm, let's go live to the National Hurricane Center in Miami and Fox News Radio's Kirsten McNary.
Chris, Irene's core is spending the afternoon moving over southeastern North Carolina. She may weaken slightly, but forecasters here emphasize people in her path shouldn't take that as an all clear.
Southeast Virginia, the Hamptons Roads area, the hurricane's going to be nearing there, making its closest approach at high tide. And we think that there's going to be a very high storm surge. It could be 5 to 10 feet. And those are levels very close to what we observed in Hurricane Isabel.
Todd Kimberlane says already rain-drenched parts of New York and New Jersey may also experience severe flooding, Chris.
All right, thanks, Kirsten. In New York City, it's never happened before. The city's entire public transportation system, from its subways, closed as of noon today until Irene beats it out of town. While many Americans got their first introduction to the Muslim faith during the shock of the September 11th attacks, a decade later, still a lot of fear and suspicion directed at American Muslims. Here's another in our ongoing series, 9-11, 10 years later.
Just days after the 9-11 attacks, President Bush stood with Muslim leaders at a D.C. mosque intended to buffer anti-Islamic hate crimes. But Corey Saylor with the Council on American-Islamic Relations says Islamophobia is again on the rise.
The anger over the economy, the anger that sort of seems to come from the election of an African-American president, Islam already being something of suspicion.
Two dozen states have either approved or considered legislation banning Islamic Sharia law.
Unfortunately, in certain circles, using Muslims as a lump threat to our nation is seen as a winning political strategy.
But supporters of anti-Sharia legislation say it upholds American values. Jared Halpern, Fox News Radio.
Filmmaker Sofia Coppola of Lost in Translation fame getting married today in the remote southern Italian town of Bernalda in historic Palazzo renovated by her famous father, Francis Ford Coppola. I'm Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. Supposed to be mostly sunny today once those clouds and fog leave us. High of 76, north-northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tonight, mostly clear, low of 56. The north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Sunday, we got morning clouds, then mostly sunny. High of 78, north-northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour.